So we're going to talk about this coronavirus thing today, okay? Let me just say this, is that when something becomes an epidemic, it's when it breaks out into an area. When something becomes a pandemic, it spreads to other areas, okay? The current U.S. population is over 331 million people. The coronavirus cases in the U.S. as of yesterday is 2,443 in 49 states. Okay? I think if I do my math right, that's like 8%. 8%. There have been 50 deaths in the U.S. as of yesterday, with at least one in California. Okay, which is the one up in Roseville. So, you know, we've heard a lot about the coronavirus. Well, the coronavirus is basically a respiratory infection. Okay, it's a respiratory infection. And it really kind of came under our radar at the end of January of this year. And so the big question is, you know, is this thing deadly? Well, yeah, it is deadly. But the illness is fatal in according to my information, 2% of cases. And those that are at risk are the elderly and patients with pre-existing conditions, such as diabetes, heart disease, these kinds of things. And so is this disease contagious? Yeah, it is contagious. Okay? This virus spreads from person to person, okay, and it spreads through, through coughing and breathing on people, and it also is transmitted by touching areas that have been contaminated, okay. And so, can you get it from your dog or your cat? No. Okay, animal lovers, you know, rejoice. You can't get it from your pets, okay? But when we talk about this virus, okay, let me just give you a little history, okay, on previous outbreaks that we have had in history, okay? And I have a reason for doing this, okay? In 1918, we had influenza. That infected nearly a third of the world's population before it fizzled out. And of course, you know, back then in 1918, life was very different. Okay, we were in the middle of war, and viruses were being carried. People were living in crowded conditions. There was poor hygiene back then. And this disease was able to build and build and build. And so there was 500 million global cases back then. There was 50 million deaths. There was 675,000 in the United States. Again, 2% of that. And it affected people who were healthy. It infected people from the ages of 20 to 40. One that is more recent is something that we hear about all the time. We hear about the seasonal flu. Every year, you know, we have a breakout of the flu, you know, and the thing about it is with the flu, it's the strain of flu is always mutating. And so what pops up one year is not the same as the previous year. And it's hard to predict, you know, with it, you know, and of course with the flu comes fever and cough and sore throat and fatigue and things like that. 9% of the population, or about 1 billion, are infected with that. And 5 million can be severe. The global death toll is like 291,000 for anywhere from 291,000 to 646,000 around the world, 1% of the population. And again, most of the people that are affected by that are older adults and people that have compromised immune systems. And then in 2002 through 2004, we had SARS, which is a severe acute respiratory syndrome, and it's another type of coronavirus. So the coronavirus is not new. This strain is new, but we've had coronavirus before. Okay, it also came out of China. You know, and it spread quickly, and the death rate from that one claimed more lives than the current one when it finally ran its course. Most people that were affected were people 60 and older, and had a 55% higher death rate. In 2009, we had the H1N1. And it was a new type of flu. It was a new type of strain that popped up, and people panicked. Does that sound familiar? People panicked because they didn't have a vaccine. And this was a different kind of strain, and it was spreading fast. And it claimed over 12,000 lives in the U.S. You know, global deaths were 284,000. In the U.S., it was 12,469. And the people that were affected by that were hardest hit were children. 40% of children between the ages of 5 and 19 developed the symptoms as compared to the 11% of people age 65 and up. And lastly, but certainly not least, in 2014 to 2016, we had the Ebola virus, which was extremely deadly, and it killed up to 50% of those who got it. But because it was predominantly spread through body fluids like sweat and blood, it wasn't as contagious as the coronavirus that we have now. Global cases of it was 28,652 cases across 10 countries. Global deaths were 11,325. The death rate was 50%, and the people that were most affected were children. The reason I share all this is I am not comparing the current coronavirus to these things. I'm not comparing them in an attempt to downplay the current coronavirus. That's not my purpose for sharing that information with you. My purpose for sharing this information with you is that you don't have to panic. Because of the fact that even though this thing that we're getting is new and they haven't found a vaccine yet, is the fact that we have a history of diseases that have surged all over the world and we're still here. Okay? This is not the first time this has happened in our history, and God willing, it won't be the last. This is part of living in a fallen world. We have diseases. The thing that I really want to address right now that was addressed in a lot of the prayers that were said this morning is the topic of fear with this. And it has amazed me the level of fear that has been generated. You know, now obviously we need to take precautions, and I'm not saying we shouldn't. But I really think that we need to be careful to not let fear control us. You know, to not go crazy with fear. I went to my mother's on Friday. I go see my mother every other week. She's 86. She lives with my aunt who's 88. And I walked in the door and I got abruptly scolded and told, "Don't touch me, don't kiss me, don't hug me." And my response was, "I'm not sick. I haven't been around anybody who is, and I haven't been to any countries that had it." And still, I felt like I was treated like a leper by my own mother. And then they proceeded to tell me that week they had been to Walmart, they'd been to Costco, they had been to the DMV, they had been to all these places where there's lots of people. And you know, when you go to stores, you go in and you pick up stuff, right? How many other people picked it up? You know, and it's like I'm sitting there going, okay, you're afraid of me who's healthy and you went to all these places and you really put yourself more at risk going out there and don't even realize this. I mean, fear just does crazy things with people. Somebody said earlier that that the virus creates fear. The virus doesn't create fear. The virus creates what it does. The devil creates fear, and people spread fear. Which means if we spread it, we can stop it. So where are we at here? Because one of the things that we have, I'm sure we have all heard about, is all the churches that are either closing down, meaning they're not having services. Some are doing things, you know, over the internet. And some are actually being very creative, and they're doing things to have, you know, where they're kind of coordinating the things that they're doing. Well, here at Community of Grace, we are not planning on stopping any services. Okay? I don't know about all of the ministries, but I know that a lot of them are going to be going on as normal. Okay, the Bible study that we have before this is going to go on. The Wednesday night classes are going to go on. Hey Hop is going to meet tomorrow night, and they're actually going to target the coronavirus tomorrow night. Right? Yeah. So that's going on. I know the food pantry is going to go on. Now they're going to make adjustments in how they do the food pantry for the safety of themselves and for the safety of the people that they're serving, and I think that's good. So, you know, and I don't know about, prophetic is not planning on stopping from what I know, and so a lot of the things that we're doing are going to go on. Okay? But let me just say this, is that I realize that because of this, there are people that are wanting to take precautions. That everyone's level of faith is not the same. There are some people that will boldly charge into situations, you know, and be like a John G. Lake and say, listen, I'm going to go and do all these things and I'm not going to, it can't touch me. But and not everyone is in that same spot. And some people, because of their health conditions, they are more vulnerable because of their health conditions. And so let me just say this. If you feel like if it's hard for you to be here, you don't have to. And we will not judge you. And we will not criticize you. And we will not think less of you. If you feel that, you know, I just cannot come. I just can't. You know, we're still your church family. Okay, we will still love you. You know, and we will still be here when you get to the place where you say, okay, I think I can come back now. Okay? But I think that we need to stay open and we need to be functioning. Now, I'm not criticizing the other places that are shutting down. Everybody needs to do what they feel like God is telling them to do. But for me, and I heard it voiced in some of the prayers, is that we need to stay open to be that beacon. Because right now, we are in a time where this crisis, this situation, creates a ministry opportunity where the church can do something about it. And it's going to be really hard to do that if our doors are shut. It's kind of like, what message does it show the world when the church closes down? As opposed to the church doors still being open and saying, you know what, yeah, this is going on, but our God is greater. And so we're not shutting down and we're not stopping. And so this thing creates an opportunity to where we can minister maybe in ways that we could minister before. I've done a couple of funerals of late. And one of the things that funerals do is they create an openness to the gospel where the gospel wasn't there before, because people are confronted with their own mortality. There's questions of, you know, people need hope, they need reassurance, they need these things. And so talking about Jesus at a funeral, people are more receptive at a funeral than they are a lot of other times. This is why you see so many ministers preaching the gospel at a funeral, because people are receptive where normally they wouldn't be as much. And I think that this whole situation with the virus creates another situation to where the church can minister in ways that we couldn't minister before. Now there's two things with this. The first one is I think that as we continue on, I think that the church needs to show care and concern for the community. Okay? And I think one of the reasons why some churches have closed their doors is trying to show that they are concerned for the community. In other words, they don't want to be labeled as not cooperating and therefore maybe contributing to spreading the virus or creating a situation where it could break out. Okay, and so the church does need to show concern for the community. It's part of our witness. But again, coupled with that is, what does it say to the world when we back off? What does it say to the world when our doors shut? And so we need to be careful with this. And so in a time like this, we need to ask ourselves, are we being reactors or responders? Okay? My mother's reaction to me on Friday was a reaction. It wasn't a response. Okay? Our decision to stay open is a response. Other places that have said, well, you know, we're going to do things differently, but we're going to do some things differently instead is a response. And so we need to make sure that we are people who are responders and not reactors. And we need to look, each of us needs to look at the opportunities to minister that come out of this. You know, and so we need to look at that as we keep our doors open. We need to look at this with the ministries that we do, the opportunities that we have. One of the big questions that's on the table right now is, what are we going to do about the Easter egg hunt? Okay? And there's going to be a final decision made this week on that, and Tony and Marilyn and I are talking about this. But I will say this, is that, let me just kind of plant a seed in your minds. So let's say we don't have an Easter egg hunt. But what if we do something different? What if we do something ministry oriented that reaches the community in terms of where it's at right now, to a community that is fear gripped with the coronavirus? How would we minister? Let's do something that's relevant. Let's do something different. And I think that this creates that opportunity for that. Is this time creates an opportunity for us to do things and reach people in a way that we couldn't reach them before. Giving us new ways to be relevant. New ways to minister. So instead of backing off and worrying about what that says, let's just do things in a different way that reaches people in a way we couldn't reach them before. Let me give you a bunch of verses. Hebrews 10:24 and 25. Let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, okay, as is the habit of some, but encourage one another. That verse is really huge, because one of the things, I mean, somebody up here mentioned about not isolating. And the danger of isolation is this. When we isolate, it puts us in a place of being vulnerable to the enemy. Because when we isolate, all we have to listen to is our own thoughts. Unless you're someone that really, you know, can hear the voice of God and you're hearing what God is saying. But if you're not someone that does that as well as others, you know, you're listening to your own thoughts and maybe listening to the voice of the devil. And if you can't distinguish between which is which, then if you isolate, you have nobody speaking into your life saying, hey, that which you're thinking isn't right. That which you're thinking isn't God. And so what happens is it creates a situation where people are isolated and they start spinning on stuff and thinking about stuff and they work themselves into a state. And so one of the things about coming together is it creates an opportunity for us to speak into the lives of one another. And like today, it's to give encouragement and to give hope in a time where people are scared. And to encourage us to say, you know what, this is not a time to be fearful. This is a time to be advancing. But it's hard to do that if you're isolated. By the way, warfare strategy is isolate and take out. John 16:33, these things I have spoken to you so that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation. Yeah? Yeah. But take courage. I have overcome the world. God has overcome the coronavirus already. The virus just doesn't know it. First John 4:4, you are from God, little children, and have overcome them because greater is He who is in you than he who is in the world. God is greater than the virus. God is greater than our fears. 1 John 5:4, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world. How many of you are born of God? Okay, get those hands up there. Come on. How many of you are born of God? Okay, you have already overcome. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. See, fear attacks faith. And one of the things that is under assault isn't just our respiratory systems, it's our faith. Mark 16. 14 through 19. Afterward, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at the table, and he reproached them for their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they had not believed those who had seen him after he had risen. This is talking about Jesus after he had risen from the grave. And he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. These signs will accompany those who have believed in my name. They will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues. They will pick up serpents. They will drink, and if they drink deadly poison, it will not harm them. They will lay their hands on the sick and they will recover. So then the Lord Jesus, after he had spoken these things to them, he was received up into heaven and sat down at the right hand of God. So, you know, I think Brenda shared about John G. Lake. I mean, John G. Lake just lived this out. You know, he's over there, you know, burying people that were infected full of disease and it didn't touch him. To the point where he puts them to the test and says, here, put some of their fluid in my hand and put it under a microscope and look. And as soon as it touched his hand, it was dead. That is this verse coming out. And let me read you another verse. This is Psalm 91, and I think it's on a slide, isn't it? Ah, there it is. Okay, I put it up there so that you can follow along with me. Okay, beginning with verse 1, I'm gonna read the whole psalm. It's 16 verses. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God, in whom will I trust? For it is He who delivers you from the snare of the tempter and from the deadly pestilence. Okay? He will cover you with His pinions, in other words, with His wings. And under His wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and a bulwark, in other words, like a wall around a city. Okay? You will not be afraid of the terror by night, nor of the arrow that flies by day, of the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or of the destruction that lays waste at noon. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not approach you. You will only look on. You will only look on with your eyes and see the recompense of the wicked. In other words, you will see the punishment of the wicked. For you have made the Lord my refuge, even the Most High your dwelling place. No evil will befall you, nor will any plague come near your tent. For he will give his angels charge concerning you to guard you in all your ways, and they will bear you up in their hands, that you do not strike your foot against a stone. You will tread upon the lion and cobra, the young lion and the serpent you will trample down. Because he has loved me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him securely on high because he has known my name. He will call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. With a long life I will satisfy him and let him see my salvation. You know, sometimes we are so quick to jump into things that sometimes we don't realize the real battle that's going on. And again, like I said, the virus is an issue. But I think another battle that's going on with the virus is the issue of fear. And the thing about it is, I think that this is a battle that's been going on for quite a while. I think this whole scare with the virus is just the next chapter of it. You know, prior to this, and I'm going to say this, and when I say this, I don't want people to get up and walk out on me, okay? Is, you know, before the virus, there was fear over government leaders. Whether you're on this side of the fence or on this side of the fence, there was fear, tremendous fear. Fear like I've not seen it before. We've had people that aren't in favor of a certain leader, but I have never seen reactions like I've seen now. Before that, we had other things we were afraid of. We have been in a battle of fear. And as I said, fears of the devil. Fears of the devil. This country is full of fear right now. And it's not only out there, it's in the churches too. You know, but the thing about it is that we're not supposed to be a people of fear. We're supposed to be a people of faith. 1 Peter 5:8 says, "Be sober of spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." As I said, fear is not of God. The devil is prowling around, seeking for someone that he can clamp onto and say, "Be fearful. Now spread it." You know, in the story of Israel, when they took the promised land, when they sent the spies in, when they sent in the 12 spies, 12 went in, 12 came out, 2 gave an accurate report of and said, "You know what? The land is beautiful just like God said, and there's giants in the land, but you know what? We can take them. We can take them." 10 spies came back and said, "You know what? The land is indeed beautiful, but you know what? There's giants there, and we're like grasshoppers compared to them. We can't take this land. They'll stomp on us. They'll squash us. You know, the land will gobble us up." 10 were fearful. 2 were not. And as a result of that, the entire nation at that time did not go into the promised land. They went back out into the wilderness for many years, until all of that fearful generation died out. Because people of fear cannot be conquerors. The only 2 from that whole group that went in and took the land were Joshua and Caleb. They were the 2 that said, "You know what? We can take this with our God." And so they went, and they went with the whole next generation, and they took the land. God had shown them repeatedly in their history that He was God, that nothing was impossible. He showed them repeatedly in the wilderness. He showed them with Egypt. Not only did He show them, He told them what He was going to do, and He did it. And so because of all of that, and they saw miraculous things. Man, I would love to have seen that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, we haven't seen stuff like that. You know, fire falling from heaven and, you know, hailstones the size of boulders and taking out 100 of people of the enemy. I mean, this kind of stuff was crazy. You know, seas parting. You know, God's manifested presence coming down in a pillar of fire. And they had that every single night. And they had His visible presence as a cloud every single day. Man, I would love to see that kind of stuff. And they had that. And God said, "I am with you and I will help you. And with me, you're going to take that land because I've given it to you." And still, they didn't believe. Why? Because of fear. Their fear was so strong that it caused them to be blind to the manifested presence that they saw. And the thing about it is, God has been working and moving in all of our lives, all throughout our lives. And if you think about your lives, you can all give story after story after story of how good God is and the things that He's done. God hasn't changed. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? So therefore, if God was working in your life before, guess what? He's working in it now. And He is working in your life just to have a virus take you out. Because He's got plans for you. Yeah. I think that the devil is having a field day with our fear. And I say, let's spoil his party. Okay? Let's spoil his party. Let's pop his balloon. Deuteronomy 31:6 says this. It says, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them, for the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. God and Moses both said this to Joshua 6 different times in the books of Deuteronomy and the book of Joshua. They told him this 6 times because he was going to go in and take that land. He was going to take 1 million people and go in and take that land. He was taking over the leadership of a nation of 1 million people from Moses. And I will bet you the reason that is said in there 6 times is because I'll bet you he was scared. But you know what? They went in and took that land. You know, the definition of courage isn't being fearless. The definition of courage is not letting fear hold you back. So what I'm saying is this. I think we need to be wise in this time. I think that we need to be prepared, yeah. But I think we need to not let fear rule us. I think this is a time to be trusting God. Of course, we should always be doing that anyway. For us, it's really just business as usual. We just got another thing to deal with. Okay?